Chapter 14. Satyr's Day Night. The royal palace was beautiful. It had a delicate lattice roof supported by tall, slender columns which looked like tree trunks. The entire structure was pure white and covered a large area of gently undulating grass. There were walls which formed a maze of smaller rooms, but the unicorns clearly preferred open-air shelters over fully enclosed structures. The throne, if you could call it that, consisted of a large, straw-filled area at the top of a slight central hill. There was something about the space created by the architecture that generated a feeling of peace, tranquility, and awe. It was inviting, but demanded respect. A pair of stern unicorns with long, glowing horns guided them to the throne room and invited them to wait before retreating to the shadows at the edges. A smaller, much friendlier unicorn without a horn approached and welcomed them to the palace. "Good afternoon, gentlemen and Bernice," began the unicorn. "I hope that your stay with us has been enjoyable thus far. The queen will be here shortly, but in the meantime, is there anything I could get you to eat or drink, or any questions I could answer?"
"I think we're fine conserving food," answered Janus with a pat to his belly.
"I have a question, if you don't mind," said Stavius. "I don't know much about unicorns, but I noticed that the men are all considerably smaller than the women."
Bernice slapped her hand against her head and started to say, "Let me apologize for the boy.
Before he could complete his thought, however, they all felt the sensation of surprise as the unicorn gently said, "Male unicorns are called stallions, and females are called mares, young man. Why would you say that the stallions are smaller than the mares?" Stavius was horribly embarrassed, but had to answer, so he explained, "Well, all the unicorns like you who don't have horns are much smaller than the mares who do." They all felt a surge of warm laughter as the unicorn said, "Stavius, there are no stallions here. The unicorns without horns are foals, or yearlings." Seeing the two boys' confusion, she continued, "Unicorns are hornless and genderless until their second birthday. Stallions and mares do not live together, and for the first year of our lives, foals live here with our mothers. Yearlings live with their fathers for the second year of their lives and return here in the spring of their second birthday. Every May, there is a promulgation ceremony where every yearling proclaims his or her gender. Those who become fillies stay here and develop their horns, while the colts leave to live with their fathers and develop male genitalia." The two boys stared at the unicorn agape until Stavius incredulously asked, "So you get to choose your gender?"
"No," disagreed Janus. "I don't think they choose. I think what happens is that they realize their gender and embrace it."
"Exactly, Janus," said the unicorn. "My name is Ilona, and I am a filly. My horn is only a bump, but it will be pretty obvious by my next birthday. They rapidly grow for the first 2 years, and then slow down after that, although a unicorn's horn will continue to grow through her entire life." Stavius's mind was filled with new questions about stallions and why they didn't live with the mares, but he didn't get to ask before the queen arrived. Ilona bent her front knees to kneel and bow her head as a chestnut-brown unicorn with a long blonde mane and tail and the longest horn Stavius had ever seen entered the room. The boys and Bernice quickly bowed as well and didn't look up again until they heard her say, "Rise, friends of Equus. Any humans who willingly risk their lives to save a dear friend of mine are welcome here."
"Thank you, Your Majesty," answered Bernice as she rose. "May I please introduce Stavius and Janus? They are two of the prophecy heroes."
"My understanding of human ways is limited, but is it not odd for one of the prophecy heroes to be named Janus?" asked the queen.
"Yes, it is," replied Bernice, "but these are no ordinary heroes. I believe that they might be the ones to fulfill the prophecy."
"That is strong praise, Captain," answered the queen. "You have been observing these prophecy attempts for several centuries and have never made such a comment. I hope you are right, and I wish you well."
Stavius and Janus both felt a warm glow of pleasure. It almost seemed as though this magnificent creature could radiate love, and the boys wanted to please her more than anything else. Neither had ever met a royal figure before, and both were astounded by her grace and bearing.
"Thank you, Your Majesty. You are too kind," Stavius finally managed to croak out. He was so choked up with emotion that he could barely speak when she looked at him.
He had only ever seen unicorns from a distance, but something about her face, other than the long horn protruding from her forehead, made her look more human than equine. He couldn't quite place what it was, but it made him feel completely at ease around her.
"Nonsense, you have earned this praise," the queen assured them. "Please call me Queen Esthara, and tell me what I can do to help you."
Both Stavius and Janus were too overwhelmed to form an answer, so Bernice made a request for them. "These two need to get to Septumcalus as quickly as possible. Their compatriots are due to be executed during Lunafest, and they must arrive in time to rescue them. I am too slow and still too weak to carry them that distance in time. Can you arrange transport for them?"
"That is a noble cause, and I am sure we can help you," Queen Esthara replied. "Is there anything else?"
"I am still pretty drained from my ordeal," said Stavius. "Do you know of any way to re-energize me more quickly?"
"And is there any way we could re-energize these stones?" asked Janus as he pulled the two dragon stones out of his pocket.
The unicorn guards immediately stiffened as the queen and Alona drew back in horror. "Put those away, young man, and never bring such disgusting objects near me again," commanded the queen.
I'm sorry, Janus quickly replied as he stuffed the rocks back into his pockets. "What did I do wrong?"
"Do you know what those are, young man?" asked the queen after the rocks were safely out of sight.
"I thought they were special rocks that hold magical charges. They were given to us to help us survive our journey," Janus answered in a shaky voice. A sensation of fear, disgust, and downright revulsion saturated the room.
"Those are called gastroliths, Janus," Queen Esthara lectured. "They do retain magical energy, much like our horns. However, they come from dragons. Dragons are unable to chew their food, so they swallow stones to grind what they eat in their gizzards. Over time, these stones become smooth and saturated with magical energy absorbed from the dragon." Stavius's belly began to feel pains of nausea as he began to sense where Queen Esthera's lesson was heading. He always tried to avoid killing dragons, but had been forced to slay one or two in his prior occupation. The gastroliths in a 5-foot-tall chigan ranged from pea-sized to small gravel. These were the size of their fists.
"The gastroliths you just showed me were from an enormous dragon," Esthera continued, "and while they might have been collected after that dragon died from old age, it is far more likely that the dragon was slaughtered so that those stones could be harvested. That sort of sickening, barbaric human behavior is one reason we stay as far away from your species as possible."
"I am so very sorry," cried Janus. "I had no idea of their source. I thought they were simply some sort of polished river stones imbued with magical energy. I will dispose of them immediately."
"You will do no such thing," insisted the queen with a terrible forcefulness in her thought. "You will take those disgusting objects far from our domain and never bring them back. I will help you on your journey, but you must leave Equus at first light tomorrow. Appear at the north gate at dawn and take those infernal objects with you." The queen rose, turned her back on the three of them, and quickly strode out of the room, with Alona following close behind. The two guards escorted the three travelers out of the palace while Janus kept muttering, "I'm sorry, I'm so sorry, I had no idea what these were."
Bernice escorted the boys back to where Stavius had awakened this morning. She advised them to take a nap because they were going to be staying up late tonight and would need to arise early in the morning. Stavius suggested that they should skip the satyr's festivities, but Bernice assured him that this was not an optional request. Bernice then added, "I'll be back at dusk to walk you over there. Sleep quickly," before trotting off to tend to other duties. The boys took her advice and curled up in the soft grass near the spring. Stavius tried to apologize for whatever he had said to offend Janus, but his companion rolled away, saying that he didn't want to talk about it. Stavius's mind was reeling from everything that had happened today. It seemed as though a week had passed since morning, and he had no idea how he was going to nap as he replayed the day's events in his head. He closed his eyes and evidently succeeded, because the next time he opened them, he was being gently kicked awake by a centaur.
"Get up, you lazy bums," grumbled Bernice as she gave Janus a similar kick. "Satyrs hate guests who arrive late, and you do not want to see them when they're in a bad mood."
Both of the boys would have preferred to go back to sleep, but Bernice was insistent. They stood up, splashed some water on their faces, and followed Bernice to the satyr's village. The bright glow and loud music emanating from the carved pavilion convinced them that they would not be going back to sleep any time soon. The pavilion had been reconfigured since lunchtime and turned into a sort of dance hall. There were still tall tables around the edges, but the raised platform was cleared except for the unique carved table and a few on either side.
The result was a large, raised, wooden dance floor with a band at one end and a handful of tables at the other. The whole place was illuminated by glowing, color-changing orbs floating amongst the rafters. It looked like a woodland disco populated by goat people, and Stavius chuckled, despite himself. Bernice left the boys at the edge of the dance floor and walked over to the bar to chat with another centaur. The satyrs were ignoring the boys, and Stavius was idly gazing at the spectacle when Janice elbowed him and pointed toward the tables at the far end of the hall. The old satyr who had chastised them at lunch was sitting at the carved table and waving them over.
"Come, friends, join party," he said in his broken English. "I am Chief Elder Sarvis. This is Elder Natitia, Elder Sternania, and Elder Elysia," he said, waving to the three female satyrs standing by the table. None of them were smiling, and both Stavius and Janice wished they were almost anywhere else.
"Thank you," said Stavius, as Janice stood silently by his side. "This is a really great party. It was nice of you to invite us."
Sarvis laughed, saying, "This not party. Party starts soon, you see, and save politeness for the unis. We all honest capra here."
"Excuse me, but what are unis and capras?" asked Janice.
"You boys know nothing, eh? Unis are, you know, unicorns," said Sarvis, and every satyr in the earshot turned and spat on the floor. When he added, "And capras are goats,"
all the nearby satyrs cheered and took a swig of their drinks.
"But you have no drinks," he exclaimed. "We have wine and beer and pear brandy that would make the gods weep. What you want?"
Stavius asked for a beer, but Janice, who was only 13 after all, requested a juice.
"We get you beer," Sarvis said to Stavius. "Not sure about juice, but you go to kitchen to find," he continued to Janice with a wave towards the far end of the pavilion behind the band.
Stavius received his beer, took a drink, and grimaced at its warmth. Then he stood at the table in silence for a few awkward moments, not knowing what to say. "What is this festival?" he asked, trying to restart the conversation.
"Festival? No, this Satyr's Day night," explained Sarvis. "Satyrs work for unis from Wednesday through Fivesday, but on Satyr's Day, we work and play for ourselves. Then on Satyr's Day night, we drink and sing and dance to celebrate living another week."
Elder Natitia added,
"And on Sunday, we nurse our hangovers."
Everyone laughed, raised their mugs, and took another swig of their drinks.
"So you work for the unicorns?" asked Stavius.
"Yes, we grow food for everyone, cook for centaurs, build and maintain buildings, and groom the unis. They love to be groomed," answered Sarvis with a groan. "And for this, they give us a safe place to live, with magic in air."
"That sounds like an equitable arrangement," noted Stavius, trying to keep the conversation positive.
"No, it not," disagreed Sarvis. "You met Queen. What you think?" "She seemed nice."
The entire table laughed, and Sarvis asked,
"What you feel when in palace?"
"Well, I guess I felt awe," answered Stavius after a moment of thought. "Meeting the Queen of the Unicorns was a pretty amazing experience."
"What, you not feel love for Queen?"
asked Sarvis with a sly wink.
"No, well, yes, but not in a girlfriend sort of way," stammered Stavius. "I mean, I really liked her and felt at ease around her, and yes, I guess I felt a general sense of love there. It was just such a wonderful experience."
"Of course you did," laughed Sarvis. "Everybody love unis. That what they do to you."
"What do you mean?" asked Stavius as Janice returned with his juice. "What do you mean when you say that's what they do to you?"
"You know how unis can talk through minds, right? They telepaths. Well, unis also make you have feelings. They empaths, too," said Sarvis, as he drained his beer and waved at someone to bring him another.
"You mean they can control our minds?" shouted Janice in alarm.
"No, no, don't worry, my friend," Sarvis assured him. "Yes, they can control minds of small, stupid animals like Gorats and Surats, but not smarter creatures like satyrs, centaurs, dragons, or even humans. Our control over our minds is too powerful for them to control. But sadly, almost no one has control over emotions. Unis can make us feel whatever they want. Love, awe, fear, anger, happiness, or sadness. We have so little control over our emotions that we feel what unis want, even when we know what they're doing. So yes, satyrs are happy here, but question is it just pretty illusion, like those tables, or is it genuine, like carvings on this one?"
explained Sarvis as his fresh beer arrived.
"Well, what does it matter?"
asked one of the other elders. Stavius couldn't remember her name.
"It make all difference in world," exclaimed Stavius. Illusions are just tricks, while carvings and emotions are real. It is difference between being puppet and being living person.
Everyone at the table silently stared at each other for several moments until Sarah said,
And that is why you sit at table with me. Yes, it is impressive that you can see through illusions, but I am more impressed that you care. That what is important, I think.
Janice asks, So is this a new form of magic? I've never heard of such a thing before. Sarvis shook his head in a half-hearted denial. His great horns rocked side to side.
This is not so much magic as an enhancement of dormant abilities found in all intelligent creatures.
He sighed and paused for a moment until his eyes brightened as he thought of an explanation.
Have you ever noticed how every now and then it seems as though someone reads another's mind?
He answered his question before anyone could speak.
Of course you have, and we always come up with rational reasons that explain it. But truth is that sometimes that really happens. We just so terribly bad at telepathy that whole concept seems absurd. Emotions, on the other hand, are an entirely different story. We might not be able to control our own very well, but there are those among us who can force emotions onto others without any magic.
Stavius and Janice glanced around the room, which caused Sarvis to laugh again.
No, you're looking in the wrong place, he chuckled. Think of this. Mothers do it all the time. They can fill their children with love simply by opening their arms.
Or guilt with a look, muttered one of the other elders. Or disappointment with a sigh, agreed another elder as they clinked wine glasses and drained their drinks.
Right, said Sarvis before he lost control of the conversation. You get idea. Unis have simply used magic to enhance those abilities to an incredible level. Hang around them long enough and you will start to do it too, although you will never be as good as them. But Saturday Day Night is time for fun, not worries about unis.
By this time, the music had started, and satyrs were beginning to dance. The band consisted of a group of drummers and several lyre players. The lyre players were impressive. Stavius and Janice had always considered lyres to be nothing more than little harps gently strummed to create serene music. This band was using magically enhanced versions which sounded like roaring rock guitars. The dancing was also amazing to watch. Satyr dancing looks a lot like Irish line dancing. Rows of satyrs dance intricate rhythms with only their hooves moving in unison. The acid rock magic lyres and the thunderous stomping of hooves caused all conversation to stop for the next half hour or so while the spectacle took place. A hookah arrived at the table and Sarvis convinced Stavius to take a puff. They were smoking something called poosh, which Stavius suspected was a relative of marijuana. The water in the hookah was filled with sliced pears and apples, which cooled the smoke and gave a fruity essence, but Stavius still coughed on his puff and nearly puked. The elders laughed and took long drags, but Stavius begged off any more hits, and Janice excused himself from the table, muttering about nasty, warm drinks. Stavius agreed with Janice's complaint and his switch from warm beer to wine a while back. For the next hour, Stavius and the elders laughed and joked and discussed the world while the rest of the village drank, laughed, and occasionally butted heads. That is not a symbolic statement. Satyrs often try to resolve disputes by charging each other and banging their ram horns together in a resounding crash. This action often seemed to relate to disagreements about bucks and does and definitely increased with the consumption of alcohol. The party started dying down after another hour, and Stavius was feeling grateful that they would be able to return in early. However, this was evidently not the way these parties usually progressed, and Sarvis was curious about the sizable and strangely quiet crowd gathering along one side of the pavilion. He had just sent someone over to investigate when there was a brilliant blue flash followed by a small explosion in the center of the crowd.
"What the Janice is going on?"
shouted Jarvis. "I'm sure it wasn't him," Stavius quickly replied.
"No, Stavius, I no mean your friend. Janice is Satyr's swear word. We best find out what those goats doing, though."
A great cheer erupted from the crowd before either of them could move, however. Within seconds, the crowd parted and a large, red-faced satyr broke through, dragging Janice by the arm.
"This not good," whispered Sarvis. "That is Staryon, the head chef. He not like people interfering with his kitchen. In fact, he not like much of anything. Staryon is insufferable, arrogant bully, but he best cook I ever known. Do not worry, I take care of this." This kid did something unbelievable in my kitchen, yelled Starion as he shoved Janice toward the others. Go ahead, tell them.
How about if I show him instead, suggested Janice. Starion, can you hand me his beer mug?
Starion grabbed Sarvis's mug, threw the beer out, wiped it clean on his apron, and handed the now empty stein to Janice.
What in Janice you doing, Starion? Screamed Sarvis. You just threw my fresh beer on a nice wood floor.
Starion ignored the chief elder as he and the other satyrs stared at Janice. Janice was rubbing the mug and concentrating his magical abilities onto it. A shimmering blue light glowed around his hands and the stein for several seconds until there was a small popping sound. The glow dissipated, but the mug retained a slightly bluish tint.
That was my favorite mug, shouted Sarvis in exasperation as he reached for the mug. What have you done to it? I don't want a blue beer mug.
Starion elbowed him away before he could reach the mug and refilled it with the beer from a nearby satyr's cup. He then handed the mug to Sarvis, saying,
Chief Elder, look at what this boy has done.
Sarvis glared at both of them, but his expression changed to puzzlement and then wonderment as he accepted the vessel. The beer mug was cold. In fact, it was so frigid that it was difficult to hold for very long. Starvis gingerly took a swig of beer and then chugged the entire mugful.
Great Terra! He exclaimed with a belch. This boy has chilled my beer! How long will this mug stay cold, Janice?
It will always remain cold, Chief Elder, said Janice. Or, like all other enchantments, it will remain as long as I am alive.
Sarvis immediately yelled, Guards! And both Stavius and Janice froze in terror as two large satyrs with long spears rushed to their sides.
Sarvis then commanded the guards, Your one mission from now is to protect this young man's life at all costs.
The guards and everyone else looked confused and were unsure what to do until Sarvis continued,
I joking, although it is good idea. This young man has brought me cold beer on hot night. I am eternally in your debt, young Janice. Actually, he has done far more than that, said Starion. He has enchanted a large slab of stone in kitchen, told us how to build something called refrigerator. Tomorrow we begin building it, and next Satyr's Day, everyone will have cold beer.
The cheer that rose from the crowd was louder than all the singing, stomping hooves, and electric lyres from before. The satyrs were treating Janice as a hero, and Stavius could see the impact on him. The shark-tongued boy, who was always ready with a sarcastic remark, was at a loss of words, but his expression was one of pure joy. Stavius doubted that Janice had ever been treated this way in his life, and it seemed, at that moment, that something had changed inside him. Ever the politician, Sarvis climbed up on the table to bring the attention back to himself.
Attention! Attention! He yelled. I, Chief Elder of the Satyrs, am making proclamation. We all know that Demigod Janice destroyed our world, and we have used his name as curse for generations. However, I proclaim that his name has been redeemed by human Janice who stands before us. By order of the Council of Satyrs, I proclaim that no one shall utter the name of the man who brought us the gift of cold beer as a curse ever again.
Starvis jumped off the table and promptly gave Janice a tight hug. He then grabbed Stavius and brought him into the embrace. Stavius said, If you think a cold beer is good, wait till you try frozen margaritas. He wasn't positive, but Stavius swore that it looked like tears were flowing from Sarvis's eyes when he released them.
You are friends, you real friends, not illusions. This your home. You must stay,
Sarvis said to the boys.
We would love to, Sarvis answered Stavius, but we have a prophecy to fulfill, and we must leave in the morning.
I know of this prophecy, and I understand, said Sarvis. But remember that this is always home for you, and you must come back. But now we must drink.
Another great cheer went up, and the party resumed.
Bernice had been right. It was going to be a very long night.